Welcome to Soundtrack, where we bring you conversations that inform, inspire, and support a thriving business community here in the South Sound. Today, we're honored to welcome Dr. Ramala Batra, Senior Vice President and Chief Medical Officer at Premera Blue Cross. Dr. Batra is a board-certified internist with more than two decades of clinical and leadership experience. Before joining Premera, she served as Chief Medical Officer at Scan Health Plan, where she led clinical operations for one of the nation's largest nonprofit Medicare Advantage plans. She's also an educator and mentor with teaching roles at UC Irvine School of Medicine and School of Business. Now at Premera, Dr. Batra leads efforts to improve care access, quality, and equity for more than 2.5 million members across the Pacific Northwest. Today, we'll talk with her about the evolving role of health plans in simplifying prior authorization, a process that affects how and when people get the care they need, and how Premera and other plans are working to reduce delays, improve coordination, and support both patients and providers. Dr. Batra, we're so excited to have you today. Welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing amazing. Thank you for asking.
Of course. Really appreciate you joining us today to talk about all the work that Premera has been doing. I think it's best to start at the beginning. So can you tell us why prior authorization has become a key topic for health plans, providers, and patients alike?
Prior auth is required by a lot of health plans before a lot of members or patients get their services that their physicians want them to get in order for them to kind of accomplish their healthcare goals. And of course, anytime there is a somewhat of a disruption in services because another entity has to approve it, it becomes a pain point for any patient. If you think about our healthcare journeys, you know, you're in the most vulnerable times, in many of the situations, you know, think about cancer care, think about acute or sick care. And so adding another step before you can get the services which you feel will help you fulfill your life or help you get to your healthcare outcomes feels like a pain point for our members. And that's why it has become super important.
When Premera said that they were joining the other major healthcare insurers into signing into this voluntary initiative through the AHIP to streamline prior authorization, can you tell our listeners how the AHIP and the other healthcare providers decided to sign on to this joint effort, and what are the goals of the effort? Why was it important for Premera to be a participant?
So for us, you know, Premera is a not-for-profit health plan. Our vision and our purpose is to make healthcare work better for our members. Anything that is a pain point for our members, whether it's in their experience or their healthcare journey, is a pain point for us. And so holds true for many of the healthcare organizations. And if this is perceived as a pain point, all the healthcare organizations or payers got together and said, hey, what can we do to make sure that a member experience is first and foremost, the members get to what they need for their healthcare journey. And of course, as a provider, I'm a primary care physician myself. What do I need to do so my patient can get to what needs to happen, whether it's a service, whether it's a lab test, whether it's radiology. And so with that in mind, you know, all our health plans got together and said, what can we do to really make this member experience seamless and yet make sure we are following evidence-based guidelines? So the reason we have prior authorization is in the first place is twofold. The first is we want to make sure, you know, medicine's moving really fast, that our members and patients or some of our providers get the most evidence-based care there is, because we all know newer surgeries are coming along, newer medicines are coming along. So that's our first and foremost, is evidence-based care is being done. Secondly, we also do it with affordability in mind. And if you look at right now across the country, number one or number two reason for bankruptcies is medical bankruptcy. And so if you can get the same kind of a care in a lower cost setting, then why not? And so when what we are trying to do prior auth, we are trying to do it with the same point of view. Are we making sure you're getting evidence-based and safe care? If the answer is yes, we want to support you. But then are you getting it at the right place, the right cost, and the right time, so you don't have a big out-of-pocket cost or big copay when you could have gotten the same thing in a different kind of a place? So those are the two things that AHIP and all the payers got together under that voluntary pledge sign up to say, how do we make sure we are still sticking true to our principles, safe and effective care, lower cost of care, and yet try and get make it better for them, a member experience perspective, so they don't feel this as a pain point while we are trying to help them for the best reason.
The commitments that are in the AHIP-led strategy, how are they influencing Primera's strategy on a broader scale?
So Primera had started that journey, I would say, even before the whole pledge. The whole pledge just solidified our commitment to it. And so when I say we started our journey before that, what I mean by that is we started looking at member experience and started thinking, what can we do differently to stick to our safe and effective care, yet make it easy to say yes faster? And so with that in mind, we started adopting technology a few years back, and what we have started doing, what we call auto authorizations, which means if a provider asks me to get a radiology test or needs an inpatient prior authorization to admit somebody, if we get the right records at the right time, instead of humanly looking through it, we have created criteria so we can auto-approve those cases. Always to say yes, never to say no, because we have doctors if we feel like it doesn't meet criteria. So we began that journey, and as of today, we almost about 20% of our services that require our authorizations are auto-authorized, which means we say yes almost in real time.
That's amazing. That's a huge jump, 20%. Yeah. And you said
Over the last year or so. So I would say we started with one use case because we want to make sure, you know, somebody's healthcare we are talking about, that we are doing it right. We have all the quality assurance. We have the nurses and physicians to make sure the model works correctly. We started with one use case, and I believe by the end of this year, we are looking at five use cases, which means over 20% of the time when you need an authorization, we get to say yes faster.
That's great. I know that on Primera's blog, it talks a lot about, you know, with your comrades in marketing communications, it talks about the right care, the right place at the right time, a new era for prior authorization. As someone who's worked in different sectors, I've heard the right thing, the right place, the right time. It's a very good call to action. I heard it in tech. I heard it in mobile. I heard it in cybersecurity, product marketing, the gamut. I understand in this case, it's underscoring that commitment that you talked about earlier, right? That holistic care element in order to make care safer, more effective, and more affordable. So can you walk us through, from your point of view, what does this new era look like in practice at Primera? And you talked a little bit about the criteria for getting something auto-authorized. How or what are the digital tools or policy tweaks or provider workflows that you're changing reflect this vision?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at our own personal lives, things are changing very fast. I cannot imagine a world where I'm not using ChatGPT anymore in the last few months or so. And so for us, it's been a boon to have technology advance really fast. And so we always try to walk in the shoes of our members first, and I would say providers second, because care delivery is done at a provider's care delivery system. And so with that in mind, we are doing twofold things. For the providers, we are trying to see how can we make it easy for them to see what, A, requires prior authorization. Only 2% of our services require prior authorization. It's a really small number when we think about 30 million claims that we pay. And then secondly, when a provider is looking at certain services and what they need to submit from documentation perspective to make sure evidence-based care is being followed, that they have access to these policies that we develop on the payer side. And so we are actually digitizing all those policies, which means, you know, if you go, just like you go on Amazon and you just type in the first two words, it pops up what you're looking for. Similarly, it'll pop up for them, and this is what the policy is, and this is what we need to submit. So once more time in their workflow, they can see real time what needs to happen so that we can get to say yes faster. That's the first thing that's happening. The second thing we are doing on the back end is we are saying, how can we make things more digital? Believe it or not, in today's day and age, I think healthcare is the only industry that we have fax machines for. We still get 800,000 faxes every day. So how can we encourage our providers to submit their request for prior authorization in a digital manner so that if one more time, if we can auto-authorize it and do it faster? So that's the second thing we're working on, is how can we increase the submission of electronic prior auth requests, as we call it. And then on the back end, one more time, we're looking at a thing, and what are some criteria that we can build around auto-approving some of those things. So the three, four criteria that are coming into play. How do we digitize policies so people know what they need to submit? How do we make sure the providers, the right thing to do, also the easy thing to do, so they can submit those requests? Ramon needs a radiology, MRI, in an electronic manner. And then on the back end, how do we create criteria so we get to say yes faster in 16 to 20% of the cases? And we continue adding that to the mix. More recently, in the last few weeks, we're also looking at the role of automation. We're looking at the role of AI and seeing how we can continue to scale and enhance. And in my perfect world, you know, all these things will happen at the point of service, which means if I'm a doctor, I'm asking for something for prior auth, right then and there, our system should be able to tell them, yes, you're approved, go ahead and schedule an appointment for your patient. So our vision is getting to that phase, and it's not that we didn't have that vision in the past. It's like the technology wasn't ready, but in the last few years, especially more so now, the technology is supporting our endeavors. So we are creating a multi-year journey to get to saying yes faster and more of what we call the point of service, which is in a clinician's office when you're seeing a doctor.
So with all these AI tools and emerging technologies that are coming into play that are advancing your workflows, advancing your processes, where would you say the barriers still lie? Is it with the providers in regards to adopting technology, or are there other variables that are holding you back or that need to be overcome or collaborated on, or does education need to take place? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. There are a lot of providers that have adopted technology, are very forward-thinking, and so it's great. But one more time, 100% of our submissions are not electronic. As I shared, we still have 1,000 faxes a day, which we have to sort out and say, who requested what? Is it the same request? Is two of the same? So that's one area. And then on the back end also, we have to also see what are the things that we can automate or authorize on its own. Healthcare is very complex. Some of the areas are simpler than the other areas, and so we are working on to see how much we can do that. So those are the two areas I would say. Healthcare is super complex. It's not as simple as ordering something on Amazon or something. We have to put a lot of thought and process into it. So those are the two big areas I would think are barriers. But I feel like over the year, especially the last, I would say, 6 to 8 months, we see adoption on both ends. We see adoption on the provider end, and we see the adoption on our end. And so I think the time is just right.
That's awesome that you're tracking progress, essentially. At the Chamber, we have a lot of small businesses, medium to small businesses, that offer health coverage to their employees. What do these changes mean for them? How do the smoother processes support better outcomes and lower costs for business owners?
Yeah, I think it means two things for them. First and foremost is from a member perspective, from their employee perspective, nobody likes to wait when they feel they need something. And even though it may not be urgent for each person who's going through the healthcare journey, everything feels urgent. And so sometimes when you don't get the real-time yes or real-time no, for that matter, you know, you're calling us, you're calling your employer, and so the experience is not as seamless as we would want it. So we expect there to be more seamless experience where no folks don't have to call us. They can sometimes even go online and look where the authorization is, or we get to say yes faster, more closer to the time when the service is being requested. That's the first thing we see. Second thing, I feel like as the cost of doing all these things goes down, you know, we are not for profit plan. We are not, you know, we are not beholden to any shareholders. It goes back in providing total cost of care. So hopefully it also helps to drive down the total cost of care in the longer, bigger picture once we are functioning at scale. So that's how I feel like they should notice a difference in experience, what they hear from their employees. We would notice that because we get a lot of calls in our call center around authorizations and things like that. And then, of course, in the total cost of care when we are using these kind of resources more real time. And last but not the least, let's not forget the providers. They always want to do the right thing for their patients. If they get to find out sooner than later, it just makes their job that much easier.
In your role, you oversee clinical strategy, utilization management, quality measures, and population health efforts. And you've spoken before about how there's a need to address disparities in health outcomes. Can you unpack for people how simplifying prior authorization helps ensure that greater equitable access to care?
Yeah, the way I would address that is when we think about our members or our patients of the provider systems, we first and foremost want to make sure they engage with the primary care providers. And there are disparities right there, like what kind of population engage. So folks that are more socially vulnerable and have other barriers, health and literacy barriers, are less likely to engage. And when they do engage, and if for some reason services get delayed, you know, they're unlikely to engage further downstream in the services. So that's one area we want to make sure that happens. The second thing that happens also, unfortunately, is sometimes when we get requests for these kind of services, the providers may not provide the right documentation at that point in time. And unfortunately, we have to say no. But then that gives the capability to the member or the provider to appeal and say, hey, wait a minute, we forgot this, let us attach that. And while there are no studies to do that, if you look at in general, like the socioeconomically disadvantaged population, or if you have, you know, literacy barriers or language barriers, you're less likely to kind of appeal that decision or less likely to engage in downstream care. And so if we go more upstream and we make the right thing to do, easy thing to do, we feel that it'll be, the providers may be able to engage the members better, make sure they show up for their test or the consultation or the surgery or the procedure that they had requested. So it helps address the barriers from that perspective as well.
You mentioned before about the need for safety and evidence-based oversight. Can you talk about how you balance that with reducing the red tape or the authorization process?
Yeah, so first and foremost, when we look at, you know, giant scheme of events I shared with you briefly earlier on, you know, we pay 30 million claims and only 2.3% of them require a prior op. So, like literally 98% of them, you don't need any prior op. You can go see the doctor or the service that you want. So it's a very, very small subset. Within that small subset also, we say no only like 40% of the time. So the number keeps getting smaller and smaller. And so so from that perspective, you know, that becomes a little smaller problem. That being said, when you are a member yourself or patient, each no feels hard and sad. And so we take it super seriously. We follow all medical evidence-based guidelines. We look at our policies on an annual basis, our quarterly basis. Some areas are moving really fast, so we are not only kind of adding things that qualify for certain criteria, but taking things off. So we're constantly looking at how it is more real-time, how it is more evidence-based. We also look at, after the fact, does this thing need to have a prior authorization, or should we just say yes? So we retire some places where we're like, we don't need a prior auth. People should just be able to go ahead and get have service that they want. If you look at all the common services, especially services that require health and wellness, there is no prior auth around it. So colonoscopy, mammogram, vaccinations, because we want people to get it faster, and we know providers are following all the evidence-based guidelines. Mm-hmm. The places where we introduce these kind of things is where we feel like the guidelines are changing really fast. Cancer care is a good example. You know, specialty medications are very expensive medication. We want to make sure people are taking it for the right reasons. The most latest one is Ozempic. You know, we know people need it. The people who have diabetes need it, and people who have diabetes and heart disease totally need it. But we also know of people who don't need it, who want to get on the Ozempic bandwagon. And so those are the kind of areas we want to make sure we have policies, we are doing the prior auth, and right people are getting on the right medicines or procedures for that matter.
This episode is proudly sponsored by Premera Blue Cross, a not-for-profit with a mission to make healthcare work better. As Washington's hometown health plan, Premera is dedicated to providing its members with access to high-quality healthcare that fits their needs. Through its commitment to supporting local initiatives and fostering innovation, Premera helps ensure we can continue bringing you the inspiring stories that drive the South Sound forward. Premera Blue Cross, always in your corner. Live1045.com is Tacoma's classic rock, featuring music, news, and views from the South Sound. Check out your new radio station. On your phone, go to live1045.com. How are you tracking success for this, or like meaningful success? Is it based on response times, provider satisfaction, or is it focused purely on health outcomes?
I would say we have a balanced scorecard. So some of the areas are more around process metrics, I would call it. So what is our turnaround time? On an average, our turnaround time is like a day. And so I would say for 80%, if it's even less than a day, if it's non-urgent. And then we look at, you know, on what percentage of the time we were able to hit to our turnaround time. So those are process metrics. But then we also look at overarching outcomes metrics and how many people did not need a certain thing and we were able to connect them to the right places. So, for example, if you need a medication, you know, if you get the medicine in a hospital setting, it's two, three times more expensive than if you were able to get it in a community-based setting or in your home setting. So we prior authorize it, which means we make sure you first need to be on that medicine. And then we go a step ahead and say, hey, Romola, this medicine, we can come to your home and give this to you, and your copay will reduce by X, Y, or Z. So we look at that too. Like, what percentage of the cases were we able to not only say yes, but say yes and do it at the right place too, so we call site of service. So I look at that data on a monthly basis, and I think about it, and why would somebody say no, and what can we do to make them feel comfortable so they can get it? And if they say no, they don't have to go to that site. They can get it anywhere else too, but we always look at it from a member-centric perspective.
Do you see, beyond the faster approvals, have you experienced or heard from patients about smoother journeys, or have your providers talked about how there's less of an administrative burden? Like, are there any stories that have come as a result of this to Primera to support the data that you're seeing?
Yeah. So we do something called provider satisfaction surveys to make sure the providers can start feeling that experience. A lot of things that I shared with you are relatively new, so they are still going through their annual cycle. Mm-hmm. So by next summer, we'll have a better idea. Because I shared with you the auto authorization policies that I said that went into play literally earlier this year or very late last year. So we'll be able to see that. The member experience, actually, what we generally track and we've been tracking is how many calls do we get because of authorizations. And if we truly are making a difference, we should see that authorization calls going down, right? People, if they get it real time, that will happen too. And then from what I call preferred side of service, we monitor the data to see, well, what percentage of people 2 years back were getting these kind of services in a community-based setting and how many are they getting. So there are other data points to monitor that too.
You've worked in healthcare for more than 20 years, from the exam room to the executive suite. What lessons have shaped how you lead at a time when the healthcare system is under so much pressure to change, to evolve, to meet patient needs and provider needs? What drives you forward?
So I am a primary care physician by background. I'm also a first generation immigrant. I'm a woman. I'm a woman of color. I'm a caregiver. And so every morning when I wake up and when I talk to my team, we always keep our purpose first and center in our mind. Am I making a difference? Am I really living up to the values that are making healthcare work better for our members? And that's how we approach our journeys. I'll tell my team, say, every night when we go to bed, we should be able to reflect and say, we did the right thing. And that's the approach we take with everything, whether it's prior authorization, it's population health management, is designing the benefits for our members, is designing products for our members, is are we doing right by our members first? Mm-hmm. And, I'm a provider, I would say delivery happens in office setting. The patient-provider relationship is sacred. Are we doing right by our providers? Mm-hmm. And last but not the least, since we are a not-for-profit plan, are we doing right by the community? All the folks in the community are not our members, but are we making a difference? Are we really moving the needle in healthcare? Mm-hmm. And so for us right now, what is super close to our heart, especially to mine, is affordability. I worry about it every morning because I hear stories where people have to pick between, should I take my food or should I pick up my insulin because my copay is so high. And so as we are looking at prior auth, we're not looking at prior auth just to add barriers to people's care. We're looking at it to make sure care is safe. We want to make sure we can continue driving lower cost of care so we don't have to have increases in premiums, increases in copays where people have to make those hard choices.
So with all this progress, what's next? What are the emerging technologies or policy shifts that you're watching closely to make further improvements on for care delivery?
So for us personally at Primera, what we are looking at constantly is how do we engage with our members in a better manner so that we can continue improving their care? Mm-hmm. So I would say a lot of focus is on omni-channel engagement. Yes, we talk to our people on the phone. Yes, we do the snail mail. But how do we improve digital engagement on all fronts? Prior authorization is another one. Like, instead of folks calling us, wouldn't it be great? I always use the example of, my kids love Domino's pizza, and so I love the Domino's pizza tracker. From the time you order to the time you deliver, you know exactly where it is because it sets the expectation for you. And so as we think about that kind of a world where given prior auth as an example, like we are trying to do it for the right reasons. Of course, I see it as a pain point for a lot of members. Wouldn't it be great if they can know where everything is and how do we get to say yes faster and what the next steps are? So that's one of the areas. But the other area in technology constantly continues to be, how do we spend more time with our members when they need our help? Not everybody needs our help. I also work with a lot of case managers and social workers. And how do we make sure that you're not spending more time documenting things, just like providers are thinking about, but actually talking to real people and solving real world problems? So that continues to be our focus, I would say, driving affordability, improving clinical outcomes, reducing equity, improving equity barriers, improving provider experience, and last but not the least, making care effective and less cost.
Dr. Batra, I really appreciate your time and thank you for sharing your expertise and vision with us today. It's very clear that your team in reforming prior authorization isn't just making changes to an administrative task, but that it's central to improving equity and access to care along with overall efficacy. To our listeners, if you found this episode valuable, please rate and subscribe and stay tuned for future conversations with changemakers in healthcare. Dr. Batra, thank you again.
Thanks, Mara. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you to our listeners for listening to Soundtrack, where we explore the heartbeat of the South Sound. We hope you enjoyed today's discussion, and if so, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your friends. Keep tuning in for more insightful conversations that keep you on the right track with all the movers and shakers who are helping to shape our region.